This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. Welcome to this Stockbox interview with Malcolm Pallet, the Executive Chairman of Coincilium, a company which recently pivoted into the DeFi, that is, decentralized finance space. Hello, Malcolm.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. And how are you?
Yes, not bad at all, thanks. Good. Very busy time for us here.
Yes, indeed. So shall we focus on, you had an announcement recently, the crypto treasury and staking update. Can you give us a bit of an overview of that bit of news, please?
Sure. Yeah, we announced this yesterday. We also have had a busy week because it had two other announcements as well, which are more strategic and both quite significant. So it's been a good week for us on sort of being able to report our progress. This particular announcement sort of really is referenced by the we did mention in our July 13, 2020 announcement that regarding the company's new direction and the strategic review that we're undergoing at the moment, that we would be engaging in an active management of our treasury of cryptocurrencies and tokens. And this was the first opportunity that we had to just really lay the stall out and show where we stand from the starting point. As to, you know, what we're really starting with. Although we've sort of actively started, we haven't really been doing this for long enough to actually be able to demonstrate a track record. But the good news is that, you know, the crypto markets have been performing extremely well since the low point in March. And with the various tokens that we've had and been earned through combination of the ICOs we've advised back in the past and other advisory clients who pay us in crypto, some of the tokens haven't been immediately convertible to cash or more liquid cryptos at a favorable price until the last few months, when we've been actively sort of switching out of certain tokens into other cryptos, and we've been setting up a system where we can actively manage our treasury position. So we announced on the 20th, but the position as from the 19th was that we had $575,000 thereabouts denominated in crypto at that time. We also included that in that announcement that we have another vesting position of tokens, which is another $100,000. I mean, that sort of fluctuates a fair bit because of obviously crypto fluctuates, but the whole purpose of our treasury management strategy is that we want to make sure that we mitigate the risk on that and also maximize the opportunities that we have in that. So we wanted to say to actually just show that, you know, look, we didn't know, because we don't treat these our cryptocurrencies as investments. We're not our investments have all been in equity positions. So, you know, we couldn't put this in our portfolio. So this is really the first time we've had a chance to sort of show investors might not have appreciated that there was, you know, this amount of funds in the coffers, so to speak. Which is say what we wanted to do. So that's where we are going forward. There's a lot of things we can do with this. We know the market very well. We know how to handle this treasury position, and we are quite confident that, you know, with the expertise that we hope to be bringing in and expect to be bringing in, should I say, in the near term, which will become apparent in further announcements, that this will be a focus. And there's also, you know, various things you can do now with DeFi models. You can stake tokens. I mean, different platforms have different ways of yielding returns for staking. It's not always an interest-based thing. So you don't always talk in terms of, you know, just loaning crypto and earning an interest rate. You can also use them for other service. There's leverage products, which we are sort of cautiously looking at, but again, with on a collateralized basis. So we're not going to sort of go out as if this is a casino, if you see what I mean, and try and leverage it. We have got, you know, we've got disciplines in place to do this properly. And there's also other things we can do with some of our tokens, such as we can, we have, because our relationships with platforms, the ability to provide liquidity to certain markets for certain tokens. And if we get the chance to do that, we can buy those and put those in and earn a little bit more up the risk scale, but it's certainly the returns are there. So if you manage that, then that could be interesting as well. But liquidity kind of provision is an interesting one that we're sort of exploring as well. So again, early days, but nonetheless, you know, that's in the tank. So we're not sort of in any way desperate, but we want to sort of make sure that we approach this professionally, we get the right skill sets in, and we can potentially extend the service to take advantage of any other opportunities we get with that.
Okay, and is this releasing of value part of the pivot into the DeFi space, or has it always been part of the coin model?
It's certainly relevant to the DeFi space because this space gives us the opportunity to actually do more with our crypto than just buy it, hold it, and sell it.
Yes.
Ultimately, we've had this crypto in treasury. It hasn't in the past been of the value it is now. But since it's reached these valuations, we're actively managing it to make sure that we don't get caught in any downdraft with that, as a lot of companies in this space have done. And we make sure that we manage it in a you know, prudent way. So it's not that the treasury management has not been as focused for us in the past. We've been mostly, or the crypto treasury management, should I say, certainly the cash treasury has been, but this is another aspect, and you do need to have those skill sets in house to do so, to do that.
Okay, so that looks like a fairly robust position. And just looking at your share price, what's your view on the share price? Because it looks like it's been under pressure recently.
Okay, well, I mean, we've got a mixed audience, so I'm not going to use any expletives. I'm absolutely, it's frustrating. I mean, that's a very, very light way of putting it, because, you know, you do what you can, and you release news that you think that is going to, show the market that you're moving in the direction, and then you have sellers coming in and, for whatever reason, I mean, you know, it could be that they're not happy with the news. I wouldn't sort of find a logical way to explain that, but nonetheless, you never know what people think. It could be that they, you know, need the money and need the funds, and, you know, this is what they wanted to do. There might be, you know, I've often seen that with when companies come out with good news and their sales come in, it's often because, you know, the window of liquidity opens up. So, and that, you know, prior to that, in a small stock like ours, it wasn't there. But that said, you know, my main frustration is not so much with you know, one-off sells here and there. It's more to do with the way the market handles our share trading. I think, you know, our view is that whatever it takes, whatever we need to do, we want to make sure that in the long term, our shares can be actively traded by as many people as possible. We understand the restrictions that on a small market, a growth market like Aquis, and in turn they've kind of focused since Aquis took over Nex. You know, they've publicly stated their intention is to increase liquidity. I mean, we've got to give them a chance to do this, but equally, you know, we're not going to be sitting around just hoping for the best. We are, you know, putting in plans to ensure that long term, our company needs to have the right type of environment for investors to have confidence that, because that's what it's down to. It's confidence in trading. You know, you're not going to want to buy a share that you can't get out of. So, and that's really sort of perhaps a legacy issue with the way the market's traded. We're constantly speaking to our brokers, and but, you know, I think, to be fair, you know, I'm always an optimistic person, so I don't sort of, I think if we didn't have this kind of buffer, and, you know, we know that we've got revenues coming in, we'd perhaps be a little bit more, we are concerned, but, you know, it'll be a different situation. We're in control of the agenda here. So, it's still a priority, and it's still something we're not comfortable, we're not happy with. And I do, you know, sympathize with any shareholders, because ultimately, you know, my background is as a private investor. I want to make sure that I get up when I look at my portfolio, it's moving in the right direction. And if it's not, then I've got control over what the outcome's going to be. So, you know, that's really it. I can't say too much now, because there are plans afoot for us to address this properly. It's been a challenge for a while. I think what happened and what you see is once there's confidence that there's a two-way market there, then things can take care of themselves a lot better. But, you know, that's the fundamental thing I believe we need to address. And that's something we will be addressing. And as I say, hopefully we'll be able to provide the market with a little bit more color on that going forward. But don't want to sort of get drawn too much into that, but just really want to make sure that any shareholders listening is aware that my concerns are aligned with theirs. And likewise, you know, I'm the second largest shareholder in the company. Eddie's third. I'm marginally ahead of him. Meaningful amounts. I think I've got about 8 million shares. We want to grow the business and create value for all our shareholders by taking advantage of this highly attractive sector and this and the work we're doing. We know we're in the right place with. We've also got it's probably gone off the radar a bit, but our largest investor is a strategic investor, which is IOV Labs, a company we're very close with. We're working with strategically. We formed a joint venture with them. They bought in January on the basis that we're doing JVs with them, and we announced our JV with IOV Labs Asia. We see this as a really fertile ground for growth, and that should be a vote of confidence to in the strategy and also the support, because we offer a lot for them as well. So sort of going forward, we've got all to play for, and when you're in this space, this sector, when you actually really embedded it in it, I think investors perhaps only see what they sort of pick up in reports. Those that go a little bit further into the sector see the growth in it, particularly with DeFi right now. It's really gathering pace. And, again, sort of back to the investment side, our market cap is probably just over, at current price, if you can buy the shares at those prices, I don't know. But, I think it gives us a market cap of about 2.5 million. I mean, we get startups in this space who look for funding, and they come in through the doors with an idea on a piece of paper at 5 million. Mm. It's not necessarily that we're going to invest in those, because we're more operational, but we know we can do deals, and we know that we're generating revenues. And we've announced on Monday our first DeFi advisory client, which is paying us a retainer. Also, we have a success fee if we get their model right. That project is about remodeling their token. So, that's something that, again, will have DeFi characteristics to it. And we're quite excited about, that as a very interesting, opportunity, and one that we could make we could help their token holders and also get some serious upside from. And also, again, as we said in that announcement, there's a lot more of those types of opportunities out there. So, we're sort of revving up to get involved in this space.
Okay, good. Well, I'm sure shareholders will appreciate that, Malcolm. It's possibly as well, maybe with the switch into DeFi, just perhaps a lack of understanding around that concept. But it's something that you're clearly excited about, and you announced another announcement with your joint venture with IOV Labs. Do you think it's worth maybe giving a very brief overview of the DeFi model again?
Yeah, I think yes, that's absolutely I think that would be very helpful. But the key is, I think, just want to reiterate the context of Coincilium's move. So as a public company, we can't just wake up one morning and decide, that we're going to change our model and go from what we've told the market that we're doing to something else without a sensible process and all the other things that go with it. And even from a strategic position, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to do to relaunch and reposition ourselves. You know, our website is going to be changing. It's going to reflect the new strategy. Our branding is going to be changing as well. You know, so every area of the business is under review at the moment. And it's not like, you know, we're sitting there not knowing what to do. We know exactly what to do, but we have to document all these things and make sure we do things in the right way. So I think that the next 4 to 6 weeks, whilst this is ongoing, we're already sort of talking to web designers and also branding, and we will have a launch of the new unveiling, if you like, of the new business. But what we couldn't do is we couldn't hold off the interest that we're getting in from our clients. So we're sort of working in the new kind of shop whilst it's being renovated. And we're also announcing to the market the deals we're doing. But really, we haven't even opened for business yet in a sort of a high profile way. But that doesn't stop us doing the operational stuff we need to do, like the advisory agreements. So, you know, I just wanted to give context to actually where we sit there. And again, you know, probably 4 to 6 weeks before we can actually sort of unveil the new model. But why are we moving into DeFi? Well, I think the most important thing to appreciate is that DeFi is not actually as a concept new. And it's a very broad umbrella. It's a very big, a broad term that covers a lot of things. It happens a lot with technology. When it first comes about, anything that comes about is pebbled with technology references. So, you know, everyone was talking about blockchain, because that was the name given to this type of decentralized technology. Everyone talks about cryptocurrencies because they're virtual currencies. And the first thing that happens once, you know, the technical people get it straight away, they understand what they can do with it because that's the way their minds work. But the layman always asks, and certainly the business, anyone who's sort of focusing on the business applications and the commercial applications is always, what does it do? What can you do? How can you make money out of it? And, you know, where's the application? Of course, when you define something by the technology, it doesn't show you the utility or the purpose. So what's happened is that by design or by kind of chance, this term DeFi has become prevalent. And DeFi, as in short for decentralized finance, is actually describing the use case. So when everyone asks, what is blockchain? What is it? You know, not necessarily, but how can I use blockchain? You then have got the most, if you like, the killer app, which is the first kind of defined use case, although it's been there for a while. So this is what cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology were designed to do, which is provide an environment for peer-to-peer, decentralized financial products and services to be sold without the need for a custodian. And that's really it. So you've got all kinds of experiments to sort of developing models and platforms that are offering various different kinds of decentralized finance solutions, and lots of areas of this sector are evolving. And a decentralized finance solution could be pretty much anything that's sold through a traditional custodian financial services enterprise, a bank, an insurance company, loans, credit cards, whatever they are. I mean, credit cards are perhaps the definition of a legacy financial models, but you know, this technology is replacing a lot of, or is set to replace a lot of the traditional services, but only if it's competitive and if it's user friendly. And we're still at that stage where, you know, that's being developed. So ultimately, there's decentralized insurance offerings which allow, you know, groups to come together as a mutual, and with their tokens as collateral, they can offer insurance cover to to people for certain sort of, at the moment, quite niche markets and products. But there's nothing to stop the, you know, once the major insurers start seeing what's going on, they could add to their capacity, because that's always an issue for insurers. You know, an insurer can only insure as much as they have the capacity to insure on their balance sheet. So, you know, this is often runs into billions, but if they've got, you know, a certain sector, so perhaps directors and officers insurance, where, you know, they're limited because they've got X amount in the pool and they've got, you know, Y amount of demand, and they find that one client comes to them, wants £2 million worth of directors or £10 million worth of directors and officers insurance, and they can only find capacity for £5 million, then a model like this could, subject to regulation and, you know, a whole new, a lot of things that would need to happen before this happened, but this is the future. So you'd possibly see that going out to a syndicate of token holders who have bought those tokens, and those tokens are effectively cash, but they can be staked, and those tokens can actually represent the collateral, which will give the insurer more capacity. That's just an example of one model, and there are, you know, hundreds of models. Mm-hmm. At the moment, the biggest kind of move in DeFi is with loans, because it's the obvious one, you know, and there's a lot of things going on which are, you know, perhaps frowned on, like yield farming, which is kind of people going from one platform to another to try and get the greatest yield. And this is something that is probably, you know, it's a little bit on the shady side with some of the players, but, you know, you get that with anything that's new, any kind of new technology. The first people to come in are, you know, the people who want the quick wins. But, you know, we're so excited about this space. And obviously, as a public company as well, we've got a higher profile than and also, mm-hmm. You know, we can open doors and talk to some of the top insurers and top law firms, you know, who know us. So, you know, plus the fact that we're in Gibraltar, which is where I'm based and where our main kind of operations are sort of centered out of, although we, you know, with Eddie in Southeast Asia, we have got quite a broad base. But Gibraltar is making tremendous headway in defining the regulation you need around blockchain, and they're very progressive. So, you know, on their radar is everything to do with open finance as well. Open finance is another umbrella term, such as decentralized finance, without mm-hmm. being too pedantic. It also, you know, there aren't too many models that are purely decentralized, that are completely decentralized. Some of them are, you know, refer to open finance because that's what it is. It's open to anyone who wants to get involved, but there are elements of centralization there. But ultimately, I think, you know, going forward, the offerings will be a blend of both. And Gibraltar's very progressively exploring how to ensure that the regulation works for the participants, and also offers the degree of consumer protection that is going to be needed going forward. So we're very sort of encouraged by their progressive attitude, because the Gibraltar were the first to introduce a distributed ledger technology license and regulate that. So you've got a lot of crypto exchanges came here, but, you know, that's not the beginning and end of it. You know, as the sector evolves, they're looking at everything from the regulatory point of view, and there's streets ahead of a lot of jurisdictions. Even the UK is kind of, you know, got the FCA and everything emanates from that, got so much on their plate. They really don't focus on a little niche like this, although it's, you know, we all know that it's going to get bigger, and it is already far more than an experiment. But, you know, there's so much more at stake for them to actually, you know, keep on top of. So we're very encouraged with that we're in the right environment with the right people around us. Our advisors here, Isola's, are one of the leading law firms in this sector. So, you know, all the building blocks are in place. Mm-hmm. And we're very, you know, comfortable and confident. It's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, if we keep doing what we're doing and, you know, demonstrate to the market that we are generating revenues along the way, and, you mm-hmm. know, even participating in some, you know, very ambitious projects.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Malcolm, for that update. And I think, although you say it is a relatively, it's not a new concept, I think perhaps the mainstreamness of it, if I want a better word, is relatively new. And it's perhaps just raising that awareness. But as you say, the website's coming along, will be changed. And I look forward to talking to you again when that happens. And of course, as you start to progress in this new exciting space.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Mark. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Malcolm.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching at Stockbox Media.